Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Nothing but questions. That's what I'm bringing to the table in this midweek edition of Sabres Live. And honestly, I don't even care if you have answers, Marty. I'm just going to keep like throwing out questions. If you chime in at some point, you go right ahead. Is Patrick Waugh a good coach? That's my first question.
My first answer is that I don't think so. and look, Patrick's a fantastic goalie. Was one of the best, right? If you have a Mount Rushmore of goalies, Patrick's out there. The competitor, the Stanley Cups, the edge. Mm-hmm. There was a struggle in Colorado, despite the fact he won Coach of the Year. Then there was a struggle after. Maybe he's a good junior coach but the Quebec team that he owned was one of like the London Knights, right? It's like they have the capital, they have the money to be able to be better than everybody else.
Yep.
So he was better than everybody else in juniors. But I watch the New York Islanders, and I know where you're going. The New York Islanders are here Friday. The Sabres are playing them. You watched them last night. They lose 3-1. It's a 2-1 game to the Anaheim Ducks. They outshoot the Anaheim Ducks almost 2-1. And at the end of the night, Patrick says, we were the better team. We had chances. We just didn't bury our chances. I'm thinking like, okay, well.
They never bury their chances. That's the thing.
And they only have 9 goal scorers on the team. That's the worst in the NHL. Is it Patrick or is it roster construction? That's where my question lays.
So it's both, obviously, because there's really never, and it's not just both. It's more than even that, obviously, because there has to be player accountability in all of this. And certainly there are some handsomely paid athletes on that Islanders team that do not have performance matching contracts at this point. But the only reason that I brought it up, yes, the Islanders are here next. Aside from Patrick's rookie season with the Avalanche, when everything came together perfectly, Nathan MacKinnon jumped into the NHL, won Rookie of the Year. He had excellent goaltending from Varlamov and Jagr as a tandem. From that point on...
Wasn't that the year Tyson Berry had a fantastic year, got hurt in the playoffs against Minnesota, I think, but
possibly.
Tyson Berry was like fantastic on defense.
But after that... His seasons as a coach, if you count overtime decisions, you know, as losses, he won 39 and lost 43. And then he won 39 and he lost 43. And then with the Islanders, so far, all told, when you include the playoff exit last year, 4-1, in his time, which is now 50 total games, regular season and playoffs, he has won 24 of them and lost 26 of them.
So 39 and 43 are two really good numbers because it's Dom and my number. So that's my first fixation on. But you're right. Like I get there's some overtime losses in there. So is it point percentage better than the record 39 and 43? Yes, but it's still 39 and 43 in those years and now less than 500 winning hockey. Look, point percentage is what it is. But it's more than that right now is look at what coaching does. And we can see here in Buffalo what Lindy Ruff is trying to do with the Buffalo Sabres. And the difference and their three wins compared to the one loss, the attention to details, the defensive side of the game. But you got to let them play. You got to let them score. You got to let them, like, look at the Washington Capitals, Spencer Carberry, and what he did with Washington last year, getting them in the playoffs, despite the fact that everybody, me included, was like, oh, it's the worst team that made the playoffs, but they still made the playoffs. They were a minus 31 in the year. They still made the playoffs. This year, they beat the Rangers last night, and they outshot them more than 2-1. And Ovechkin scored a couple of goals, despite the fact that Carberry moved him to the right wing, which is a not the side that he's always been accustomed to playing. He's usually the left winger. And coaching has a lot to do. So I feel like the New York Islanders, the last few years after Barry Trotz, went into a different way with coaching, with Lane Lambert and Patrick Roy, and it's not working. So I think coaching is a big issue in New York, and I also think roster construction with the Islanders is an issue as well.
Islanders are, by the way, is it rivalry night in the NHL? Has that returned on Wednesday? I mean, look at this.
Was that on Versus back in the days?
Look at, no, NBC Sports Network.
I know.
I mean, man, these matchups are hard to beat. Islanders in Columbus, Calgary, Utah, Jersey, Vancouver. Like, this screams rivalry night. So the Islanders are
Winnipeg, Detroit. That's back in the days.
How easy to overlook.
what a hot matchup that was. The only thing that people are going to like tonight for the crowd of the staggered start is 7:30, 9:30. Like, there's not a game that starts at the same time. There's six games, and they all start at different times.
So Islanders, Columbus, and we'll see whether the Islanders can put together a more complete effort before they roll into Buffalo on Friday for what is Hockey Fights Cancer Night. The Sabres are off today. They'll be back at practice tomorrow, and we'll await any future news on Zach Benson, because obviously he's been out of the equation for quite a while without a significant update on his status. So, you know, we'll revisit it when we can.
I think he plays one of the two games. Like, I know, like, he's got to get on the ice, but they have back-to-back. And
I would say zero chance based on the fact he hasn't been part of the group and based on the approach they took with Obey Kubel.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's
they held him out longer when he was ready, and Benson's, to me, would appear more serious based on how long it's been lingering, and
you got a healthy Yuri Kulik waiting to get in. You got Kulik healthy, ready to get in. So maybe they go with a roster on Friday and insert the extra guy on Saturday for just a change. And a lot of coaches, a lot of teams do that.
But it's also going to come down to, you know, response to the loss and everything we talked about yesterday as far as, okay, who grabs a second line spot and holds on to it. And in the process of whether that's soon to be Benson again, whether it's Kulik coming back in, whether it's more productive offensively plays from Cousins and Quinn, like, there's a lot of play, but we kind of allowed that to take up a lot of the show yesterday. So I definitely won't, you know, regurgitate all of that here over the lunch hour, but
it's available on demand, odyssey.com, and on Apple Podcasts. You can go and watch our detail of the roster and what people are agreeing with me, Duffer. People are agreeing with me. Even if sometimes I don't say certain things, people are agreeing with me.
Now you know why I'm not on that platform. Is Montreal serious about winning?
Well, that's a great, great question. And when Juraj Slafkovský comes back into the lineup like he did, he had missed three games, comes back into the lineup. At the start of the season, it was Suzuki, Caulfield, Slafkovský. They were fantastic together. And because you've been moving Kirby Doc, which we discussed yesterday, to the top line on the wing, you bring back Slafkovský and you put him on a line with Newhook and Armia. It's like, are you serious? Like, right, this is your number one overall pick. He's healthy. He's back. Put him with the top players. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, it's Kirby Doc. 25 seconds into the game, that makes a mistake, doesn't cover his man. I think it was Jamie Oleksiak from the point. It goes off Madison. It's in. And then it just was compounded by mistakes. And they never fought back. Montreal didn't fight back yesterday. That's what was disappointing for Marty St. Louis, is that they just let Seattle walk all over them. And it ended up being 8-2.
Right. But I think the coach needs to bear a fair amount of the responsibility here as to whether he was actually instilling fight and belief in his team by ignoring not one, not two, not three, but four goals before he actually took a timeout and still didn't change the goaltender, who was clearly not having a good night. And the goaltender was yanked in the first minute of period number two. So
I was surprised. I was surprised about that. But you know what I thought, Duffer, is that this is an experimental year maybe as to find out more about your guys. And I've had that happen to me before where I had a so-so first period. And then I remember Tortorella one year, he pulled me against the Islanders. And then after the game, I went to him. I said, hey, if that ever happens again, like, let me fight my way out of it. And the next week it actually happened. I gave up three in the first and he kept me in there and I fought my way in. I wonder if St. Louis was trying to test Montembeau and say, hey, let's give him a reset between the first and second and let's see how he comes back, if he can fight his way out of it. And then he gave up a terrible goal a minute into the period and then he got yanked at 5-1.
Yeah, the goaltending is actually not the part that I was fixated on. It was the fact that there was no response, no passion, no stopping of the game flow with a timeout. When, I don't care whether he was committed to using the goaltender the whole night. He's got to tell the team to wake up in front of them.
There was a TV timeout coming up. There was a commercial break coming up.
Yeah, and then they got scored on right after that again.
I'm being sarcastic. No, I think they overthink that. Like, I don't care if you have a commercial break. Then you have two timeouts. Call one there, and then you shake them up, and then you shake them up again.
And Marty, it's a great reminder what you're saying for why you can use timeouts in first periods or second periods, because even if you don't technically have a timeout in the third period, you have three timeouts based on commercial breaks that if you're planning ahead and you have the attention of your team, look, if you're down by one with 10 minutes left and you know that you don't have a timeout, you know that in that commercial break or the final one, you're going to utilize that as your timeout. So don't sit here and fixate on having this whatever it is. I can't even call it a 30-second timeout because they all last a minute and a half anyway. It's ridiculous.
The commercial break lasts longer anyway, exactly. So you get a longer timeout and commercial break. Like, it is what it is.
And you know, among my many obsessions within the game, a caring coach, a passionate coach who's willing to use the timeout, it's always going to resonate with me. And I'm laughing as I tell you this. I was begging Marty St. Louis to use the timeout last night. He didn't. They end up losing 8-2.
Yeah.
I was so proud of Drew Bannister in St. Louis calling the timeout when they fell behind 2-0 in Ottawa. It didn't work. They lost 8-1. But I love the fact that he called the timeout. And the whole reason I'm back on this timeout tangent is because last week I saw the best use of a timeout in regular season October history that I have ever seen in 50 years of watching the game. The Predators, as we know, have not been off to a very good start. They were in Chicago. They had to win. Mm-hmm. They were down in the second
period
by a goal. They were already down a man. They took another penalty. It was 5-on-3 for Chicago for 8 seconds. Normally, what you might see in that situation is the team that is up 5-on-3, call a timeout.
The power play team, yeah.
Exactly. Andrew Brunette at 3-on-5 took the timeout. The draw was well played, but then they lost coverage. Saros had to make an unbelievable save to keep it 2-1. Less than a minute later, they go up the ice, score a shorthanded goal to tie it at 2, and they would go on to win the game. The timeout meant nothing in the big picture, but in the moment, for a coach to show how important this moment in a game in October to their season was, I am applauding Andrew Brunette all day.
When it works, that goes to Dan Bylsma saying to me, like, as a coach, you make the right decision when it works. If it works, you made the right decision. If it doesn't work, you made the wrong decision. But internally, you got to know that sometimes it's going to work more often than others. And a timeout, look, I don't think there's a bad decision when you take a timeout. Like, 90% of the time, the game ends and both teams still have their timeouts.
Yeah.
And you could have taken it to rest some players or to readjust something or whatnot. That's not the story. The story you mentioned, Is Patrick Waugh, is he a good coach? My answer was, is Marty St. Louis a good coach? And look, Marty was a great player. Marty had some arrogance as a player. He was a small guy that was told you're never going to make it. And he ended up winning the MVP one year, the Hart Trophy with the Tampa Bay Lightning after Calgary put him on waivers and everything, right? He had some arrogance and some screw you attitude that made it work. So last week, defensively, they were all over the place, Montreal. And there was a lot of heat. Fans were calling for Marty, like, he's not a good coach. So they asked him, what do you say when you hear that, the criticism you're taking? And Marty, very composed and very stern, looked into the reporter and says, why would I listen to people that I would never go and ask advice to? And he said that very arrogantly. Like, I was like, man, that's arrogant. Like, maybe it's true. Why would I listen to, Joe from the bridge, like, who's calling on a cell phone like that, that says, you know what? You got to put Arbor Jack Eye in net. Like, I think he'd be a good goalie. Like stupid things that are being said all the time. It's like, you're an NHL coach. You know the game. But it was arrogant for him to say it that way. And then they had two really good games. Mm-hmm. And then I watched last night and I'm like, you got to follow it up. You got to follow it through. You got to follow it through. And in the third period, I actually turned that game off. It was 6-1, I think. It ended up being 8-2. I turned the game off at 6-1 because it was 4-on-4. And Marty, down 6-1, was arguing that they should have had a power play. Like, that's what you're worried about as a coach right now, arguing the referee, we don't have a power play? There's 5 minutes left in a 6-1 game and you're arguing that you don't have a power play? Yeah. Like, come on. Like, that's why I was like, this is troubling to me.
It's funny, though. You could have phrased all of that by who said it, and if the options were Marty St. Louis or Patrick Waugh,
they both could have said
your instincts would have been correct either way. You know, like, it was fascinating just to hear you talk about it, because if you weren't paying attention and heard the name Waugh earlier in St. Louis now, you go, oh, that's something Patrick would say. And
Patrick would have said it with a more broken English than Marty. Marty's got a better English than Patrick, but goes back to, I did not hear what Jeremy says because I have two Stanley Cup ring plugged in my ear.
Yeah, exactly. Now, since we've gone down this path, has Jim Hiller put himself in an interesting spot here with the LA Kings?
Jim Miller's put himself in a bad spot.
Kevin Fiala did not play the final 24 minutes of their game 2 games ago.
Yep.
Last night, he did not play at all because he missed a team meeting. So it was a violation of team protocol. Now, Hiller in his post game said the two were unrelated. And I mean, I'll take him at his word on that. It's just an incredibly surprising coincidence that presumably a frustrated player, star player at that, after being benched, then missed a team meeting. But whatever, even if it is just coincidence, like, what do you think we're getting into here with the Kings and Kevin Fiala, who is perennially, if not the top scorer on the team, close? By the way, Kevin Fiala is top 35 in NHL scoring since he entered the league. Like, since he became a prominent player, right? So he's around elite company. His salary matches the production. 7.8 a year. He's got 4 more years left after this one. He has a no-move clause. But I wonder, because now the Kings have won 5 and they've lost 5 and they get Vegas tonight. Now, granted, Vegas has not been as good outside of their own barn, but the Kings were abysmal last night. They had 2 shots in the third period. 2! And they scored on one of them, losing 4-2 to San Jose. So I'm just really curious.
San Jose was coming off a back-to-back. The Kings were in San Jose waiting for them. So there's the goes the, we got a tired team coming back. Like, okay, tired teams can win. And San Jose had gotten an emotional overtime win the night before in Utah, traveled all the way back to San Jose, and they beat the Kings in the way they did. I said that the other day to you, I believe, on this show, that assistant coaches that take over rarely, rarely work. Because, and I don't know if I was on this show or whatnot, but I was having a conversation, and because most of the players see the assistant coach as the good guy, the guy that you talk to, the guy that's going to come and tap you on the back. And what we're seeing a lot around the NHL now, this year especially, is a little tough love, a little kick in the rear end as opposed to a pat in the back. Mm-hmm. And I think Lindy Ruff has shown that too by calling out guys, by citing really direct examples of why they lost. And Jim Hiller in LA was an assistant, comes in, and I feel like the message is not, like, if you are benched for 24 minutes and Lindy Ruff is your coach, or John Tortorella is your coach, or somebody to that temper, I can tell you this, you're not late to the next team meeting. You're not late. You are probably there a half hour before sitting in your seat because you know that you have zero leeway. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Fiala missed a meeting, that tells me more about, you know what, maybe Jim Hiller is still considered that assistant, not that head coach, not the headmaster guy. And the way the Kings responded in that game, they've not been good. They had a good game against the Sabres, home opener. Mm-hmm. And then after that, they go into Ottawa, get spanked. They go into, like, they've not been good at all.
Yeah, they're 5-3-2, so I mean, maybe the record's a little misleading. But
yeah, very misleading.
So that Fiala, you know, statistical reference was over the last 5+ seasons as far as NHL scoring is concerned. And when I scroll through that list of the top 35 point getters, you know, he's right next to Kopitar. He's right behind John Tavares. He's right ahead of Jason Robertson. So that gives you a little context as for where he stands production-wise. And if you were trying to gauge a market value, if it came to this, if somehow instantly the relationship is severed and Fiala says, I don't care about my no-move clause, I want out of here, there's no way it's a futures deal. It's going to be a one-for-one type of transaction. Right? It has to be because the Kings are in a window where they can't afford to take a step back. So they have to stay where they are and hope that they're even a little bit better than they were a season ago and hope that they don't draw Edmonton again in the first round. But if I was to look at that, let's say, group of 35 top scorers in the league, there is only one name ahead of him that has any degree of uncertainty as to the whereabouts of his career moving forward. And that player is Mitch Marner. Mm-hmm. It's the only one. Everybody else is lock stock. They're with their team. Life is good. Everything's calm. Nothing. But we still don't know what Mitch's future is, right? And of course, in the offseason, everybody joked, oh, well, Vegas will find a way to get him under their cap. They always do, right? But could you ever imagine a situation where it's Fiala and something else and something else? Maybe. And they take,
in
like,
trade
would be wild, wouldn't it?
It would be wild. It would be.
Because Fiala's not Marner. Let's be real here. Like, Marner is Marner, and the production is in that elite group of the 35 scorers that I'm talking about.
Yeah, so. I mean, despite the fact that Fiala is good and Fiala's produced, Marner's at another level. He's above that. So yeah, that would be wild. That would be. But if you're the Kings, you have to start to explore, like. Think of Luc Robitaille and Rob Blake as the upper management, and they made the deal for Pierre-Luc Dubois, and it didn't work. Now, okay, they were able to get themselves out of that deal and send them to Washington. Well, who's laughing now? The Washington Capitals. You know why?
And not which real, was great. Emily no real Kaplan, thanks to yes, Dubois, though.
No, but Emily Kaplan pointed out something really cool on the broadcast last night when talking about Pierre-Luc Dubois. She said when Washington did their homework on Pierre-Luc Dubois, they realized that one of the things that he absolutely excels at is playing against the other team top player. But in LA, he never had that responsibility because it was Kopitar and Deneau. Mm-hmm. And now he's in Washington and he plays against the other team top player. Yesterday, it was against Panarin and Trocheck and... And yeah, the points are not there, but the responsibility and the impact to the game is what Washington wanted him to do. Is it paying more than, but like put him in the right spot. But I think Rob Blake and Luc Robitaille right now have to be under a lot of the scrutiny that they were before being able to trade Pierre-Luc Dubois away, is saying, you try all these moves. You fired your coach. You made an acquisition. You traded for players. You signed players. You got a goalie. Like, you did all of this, and the record is what it is, but that team is not as good as their record shows. Mm-hmm. That's where the heat is going to come down on Rob Blake, especially when, you know, another month now. Give it to Thanksgiving, and we'll see.
His numbers may not be as spectacular as others, but he's getting run support. How are you viewing Logan Thompson and his 4-0 record with the Capitals?
As expected, Logan Thompson, when I watch him, I'm like, I think he is, if this was the WWE, if this was wrestling, he'd be fantastic because he's a showman.
Yeah.
He's a showman. Everything he does, mask on top of the head, the equipment, the paddle down, the positioning, the save, the flare, like, he's a showman. Now, the numbers are not great, but you're right. He's getting run support and he's getting wins, which is, but funny enough, Charlie Lindgren is the opposite. Lindgren is so reserved, so under control, so like, I make a save and I don't move. It's the only thing they have in common is they catch like Hudoff, or they catch with the right hand. That's the only thing they have in common, these two goalies. But even yesterday, Logan Thompson, not busy, but when the Rangers were attacking, he got to see some chances.
Mm-hmm.
Played really well. And that was a guy in Vegas that I think they couldn't wait to get rid of. And now, listen, it's not even a month into the season, so let's give it some time. But Washington looks really good right now in the way that they were able to overcome Backstrom being gone, Kuznetsov being gone, TJ Oshie being hurt. Tom Wilson has looked fantastic. And again, that's an impact to Pierre-Luc Dubois. They say Pierre-Luc Dubois has made Tom Wilson play better. Okay, mm-hmm. Great. Like, would I have taken Dubois in a trade? No. But mm-hmm. Good on Washington for spinning it and making it good.
Yeah, I love Spencer Carberry's presence. He has a lot of right touches, and it's really funny that you mentioned one of my absolute favorites. I wrote down last night while watching that game, I miss Nick Backstrom.
Yeah.
I still think people would be a little bit surprised in this superstar era of the last 20 years that from 2007 to 2021, not a single person in the NHL had more assists than Nick Backstrom. Not Crosby, not this, not that, Nick Backstrom. And that's a lot to overcome. And it's all the more impressive that right now they're, I would say, slowly reaping the benefits of that good to great team that they've had in Hershey the last couple of years. You know, you see McMichael scoring 18 for them last year, and he seems to be on his way.
Like,
so
10 shots at the one point. He did,
yeah.
The
so there's some growth, and they've had some injuries on the blue line where they backfilled from Hershey as well. So it seems to be a team that's moving in the right direction, which is hard to do when you're keeping some older players for obvious reasons. Like Alex Ovechkin, you know, people always wondered, like, well, how are they going to handle this here? Ovi keeps aging and he's still going to play a prominent role. Well, they're figuring it out right now, and the Capitals look good. We'll keep the goalie conversation going as Michael Hauser from the Amherst is going to join us after the break. And of course, we are looking forward to Friday at KeyBank Center because it's Hockey Fights Cancer Night. It's presented by Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, and we want you to show us who you're fighting for, and you could win tickets for Friday's game. Print or download the placard and write the name of the person that you're fighting for, and you can win. It's as simple as that. Visit sabres.com/fight today. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Left 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres are back in action on Friday as they will be hosting the Islanders. It's Hockey Fights Cancer Night. The Amerks are in action on Friday as well. They are in Utica, and they picked up a couple of wins last week, in large part due to the netminding of one Michael Hauser, who's with us now. Michael, great to see you. Congratulations on 200 career professional wins now, and how is the season treating you to date?
Going well. We're off to a good start. I think, you know, 3-3 record doesn't really reflect how well we've played. I think, you know, we have a chance to, we've had a chance to win every single game we've played so far, which is a really good sign for how young this team is. It's fun to play behind, to be honest. They're Other than, you know, the other night, you're going to have those games where it kind of opens up a little bit, but that's been the first one of those. And we've kind of, we've done a really good job with how young we are, kind of limiting the scoring chances and keeping it intact. So we're off to a good start.
What are you working on? And I'm only asking because I look at your game and I think you're a very good technical goalie. Your movement, your positioning, everything is almost by the book, right? But you played a lot of ECHL games and now you're playing a lot of AHL games. There's an adjustment. Even when you came and played some NHL games, there was an adjustment. So what are you working on now with your game to give you even more of that edge and that success?
Yeah, I've talked about Seamus here a lot. Him and I have worked closely the last, you know, 5-6 years. Yeah. Really, no matter where I am, I'm always keeping in touch with him. So the foundation of my game, I'm always working on my footwork, to be honest, my speed, especially on my feet, shuffle side to side, long T pushes. Those are always something that I think when I'm sharp with, if I'm beating plays on my feet to the puck, then I think my eyes and my hands are always, have always been pretty good. Those are always something I work on too. I do a lot of vision training off the ice. So when my eyes and hands are feeling good and I'm beating things on my feet, that's when I know that I'm really, really sharp. So usually just that. And then, you know, Seamus is really good at tailoring drills towards the team that we're about to play. So, you know, we play Utica twice this weekend. He'll take a look at their power play and kind of what they do. And, you know, today and tomorrow we'll tailor individual goalie drills for me and Sandstrom towards that. So he's really good with that. But we know that that speed on my feet is something that I'm always keeping on top.
Utica has been a successful place for you. Is there something about the barn that you like?
Honestly, I don't really know what it is. It's been since I was younger too. We came, when I was in San Antonio, we came up to Utica a couple times, and I think I had some success when I was younger too. And since I've been in Rochester, obviously we play them a dozen times a year, so we see them a lot. I think a little bit of it is familiarity, and you know, we always have a good team in front of us too, so it's easy to go in there and feel confident that that you can give them a chance to win. And you know, Utica's had some good teams before as well, so it's always a good test, and it's never a team that you're, you know, going in sleepy against, I guess you could say. We're always up for those games against them in Syracuse because it's such a good rivalry. And I just think it's all that combined with feeling comfortable in there.
Now, I always love playing at Madison Square Garden because of the way the ceiling was. And just to test your knowledge of the Utica building, when the Women's World Championship was in that building last year, I learned that actually MSG in New York was built kind of like Utica because Utica was trying this no beams and no obstructed view seats like the old rinks, right? And so they did that ceiling that kind of comes in a little bit like the ceiling, the famous ceiling at MSG, did afterwards. So I don't know if you knew that there was a relations between those two buildings. Maybe it gives that feel of being in the most famous arena of in the world, right? When you play in Utica.
Yeah, I found it out opposite than you did. I found it out, but obviously I had seen the Utica rink before MSG, and then the COVID year when I was up with the taxi squad and then played a couple games too, I got to go to MSG. So I saw the Utica one first and then MSG after. But yeah, I heard that fun fact a couple years ago, and it is pretty cool to have that at least visual while you're out there, that the rink's modeled after, or, you know, MSG's modeled after the Utica rink. So that is pretty cool to play in front of. But yeah, that's a fun fact.
It was a wild game on Saturday that you referenced where it got pretty wide open, ended up being a 5-4 shootout win. Can you recall a time where you were in a game where your team got a penalty shot and then the other team got a penalty shot within a 5-minute window in the same period?
No, I don't know if I've ever seen two in the same game, let alone so close to each other. I figured that, you know, once we got our penalty shot, they were coming in our breakaway. It was kind of a little like tap on the hands, but I figured they were going to, you know, they weren't just going to call a penalty after we got a penalty shot. So I was prepared for a penalty shot, pointing to center ice. And, you know, at least we both, you know, it kind of evened out at the end. We both ended up stopping our penalty shots. So, but yeah, it was, I don't think I've ever seen that before. No, even watching NHL games, I'm not sure I've ever seen it.
Yeah.
So I'll raise you one more. Eric Cole got two penalty shots against me in the same period. In the same period, I stopped him on once and he scored on the other. But yeah, like that never had happened. Two penalty shots in the
same period. You stopped him first and then he scored on the second one, or vice?
I believe he scored on the first one and I stopped the second one.
He ran out of moves is what happened.
Right. Well,
he panicked.
Michael, you were really, really, really sharp in the shootout. You know, Cleveland got the early lead on the second shooter, and then you slammed the door on the final four. Just how has that part of your game evolved over your career, and what goes into a pre-scout, or is there a major pre-scout, you know, with, I would say, shootouts diminishing here as we move along in today's hockey?
Yeah. Well, shootouts are always something that I felt comfortable in, to be honest. I've always felt more comfortable in a shootout than 3-on-3. It's something that I've had success with really since juniors. I think in juniors is when I was in juniors, they started to go to the 3-on-3 and then the shootout after. And you're right. It seems like there's a lot less shootouts now, probably because of the skill of the players, and they're more tactical in 3-on-3 too. It's puck possession. You're waiting for that, you know, grade A opportunity to jump and take advantage of it. And then if you don't score, then it's going back the other way. But just feeling comfortable in the shootouts. The other night I felt really good. In terms of pre-scout, there's not as much in the American League as there is. I know when I've been up in the NHL before, they're always rolling through shootouts, usually on the other goalie, and how they play shootouts, not so much on the player, but you know, once you play a lot, like we have Josh Dunn on our team this year, and he was telling me that the fix Wolanski on Cleveland, that's his move. That's what he does every time, is fake backhand, go low glove. And I didn't know that going into it. I ended up stopping him, but he just says that's his go-to move. So the more you play in the same division too, you start to learn those kind of things. But that's as far as the pre-scout goes, but shootouts are something, yeah, that I've always felt comfortable in. And, you know, I wish we could just go right to them, honestly, after after regulation.
Do the shootout at the start of the game so you know what the outcome will be at the
exactly.
end of the game. Like, there you go.
Yeah.
We'll do the shootout right away so you know, hey, if we tie, it's a win because we've got it in the bag. Yeah. How much NHL do you watch? I'm curious to know.
I watch quite a bit of hockey, yeah. I like all sports, honestly. Like, I love baseball. I love football. So anytime especially the Sabres are on, I try to watch all Sabres games as much as I can. I still have a soft spot for the Pens. I like watching Crosby because of, my hometown team when I was growing up. So watch Fleury last night play his last one in Pittsburgh. That was pretty cool. I thought that was a really cool moment. But yeah, I try to watch as much hockey as I can. Usually the West Coast games are a little too late, so I might watch a period if McDavid's playing at 10 or 10:30 and then go to bed after. But yeah, I love watching hockey. I'm a big on the fly guy, so I like watching the highlights too.
That's good.
But yeah.
Well, the reason I'm asking, Michael, is because a lot of goalies are struggling, right? And the numbers are showing like, hey, you know what? This has been a tough start for, and it always is usually in the first month and the scoring comes down a little bit. But are you seeing anything that, like, I'm seeing a lot of goalies that don't really have a lot of flow and don't read the plays. They're trying to be too technical, too robotic in that. I don't know. You're in the game now. I've been out of the game 10 years, but I wonder if you're watching with a critical eye and seeing something that's happening that's making the numbers that bad.
Nothing specifically, but like you said, it's kind of, you're right. They try to be really, really technical, especially coming out of the summer, I think. And you're skating with your goalie coaches and you're working on goalie drills in the summer. I think once you see the season go along and goalies start getting the flow of games, and once you start playing 10, 15, 20 games, then it's like you're kind of just playing the game. You're not playing goalie anymore. And I think that's the biggest thing is I try to tell myself that all the time. Like, you know, during the week and during practice time, there's certain things that you want to work on always, and you never want to just go out there mindlessly and just play. But when the game time comes, you kind of put all that aside and you're just playing, you're playing the game. And, you know, it doesn't matter how you make the saves in the game, as long as you're making them. So I think once you have certain, you know, number of games under your belt to start the season, I think the flow starts coming along. And, I think that's kind of how I felt this past week too, is, you know, I got the chance to play twice last week. Yeah. And even though, you know, gave up four on Saturday, but I felt really, really good even on like in zone power plays. The more times you see the same play, you know, you don't see that kind of route or passing play during the summer. Really, you're kind of out there and you're kind of a target for skilled players. But you know, once you start seeing power plays more often, you start getting the flow, and it's kind of like second nature. Then the more times you see it.
Sports is funny from a fan standpoint because we tend to prematurely age people. We think as soon as they hit 30, it's like, oh my gosh, this person's so old. It's like, the reality is they're not old at all. So why do we do that? And you're young, you're 32. Like, I mean, we've been lucky to have a lot of interactions with you over the last number of years. And I'm assuming that you also hopefully still feel young at age 32. Is that true?
Yeah. Somebody said the other day, I honestly didn't even realize it until the other day, but I'm the oldest guy in the room here. So, you know, Bershy's not here anymore. I'm the oldest guy now. And you're right. It really doesn't feel that way. I kind of, you know, I'm outspoken. I like to have fun with the guys. So no, it really doesn't feel like that. But I think the biggest thing too, especially with my game, is that I still feel like there's areas that I'm getting better in too, which is, you know, a good feeling. I think once you stop feeling like you're getting better, then you could start feeling your age a little bit. But, you know, even from the beginning of training camp, when we started working with Seamus, to now, there's just certain things that we've kind of nailed down that now I feel more comfortable in even today on the ice. So I think once that stuff stops, then you might start feeling it. But you know, right now I still feel like I'm getting better at things even, you know, day by day, which is a really confident feeling.
I'm young at 47. I've got two games in the coming month, Michael. I've got two games in 1 week, and I'm playing a game in Toronto, and then we got the Shorzy cast coming into Buffalo on November 13th, and we're playing Shorzy. So this or that, should I stretch or not stretch before the game? Because it's not going to matter much.
You got to do it just for the next morning. Even you gotta do it. The next morning would be rough if not. Honestly, I think that's super impressive that you're strapping them on and going out there. I don't know how many reps you get during.
I haven't done it in 2 years.
Yeah. So I think that's really impressive. Yeah. I would recommend touching your toes at least once before before putting the pads on.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
Yeah. Awesome. Have a great weekend in Utica, Michael. Continued success. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Michael Hauser from the Amherst. We'll wrap Sabres Live after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Birthdays, many of them. Tage Thompson, Dennis Gilbert, Drew Stafford, Henry Winkler, Gavin Rossdale. The list goes on and on. Happy birthday to all.
Happy birthday. Fun fight. Yeah, that works. I thought we were running out of show time, so I was like, do I talk now? But we have still a minute 45. So, yeah, we can actually – the Fonz. I never knew who the Fonz was until, like, I came over and I remember watching The Water Boy. Well, I came over to the U.S. Like in, it's like I crossed the Atlantic. I feel like growing up in Quebec, I was like in a different Lawrence, part maybe. Of the world. I know exactly. I came over to St. Lawrence River, which was a thing to say when I was a kid. If you lived on the South Shore, you were in a separate world. But when I came over to the U.S., I remember watching Waterboy, and he was the coach, right, of Adam Sandler and Waterboy. Mm. And I was like, this guy's funny. And they're like, yeah, he's the Fonz. I'm like, who's the Fonz? Like, I didn't know that there was such a character, the Fonz.
Five teams in the NHL are averaging 4 or more goals per game. Who are they?
I'm going to say, is Colorado up there?
No.
No? Buffalo?
No.
Jeez, I'm 0-2.
Vegas, Winnipeg, Ottawa, Columbus, and the New York Rangers.
I wouldn't have guessed Columbus. I think the other ones, yes. And Ottawa. Ottawa's got great offense. They had a little bit of a hiccup. Like, Omar came back from injury. Didn't look great the first one in Vegas. But you watched them play yesterday. They have the puck, and they don't give it up. They keep the puck. They chip it in. They get it. They're first on the puck. They're fast. They're a good team.
Ottawa's power play is at 42.9%, and it's not even number one.
Is Travis Green a good coach? That's the question for tomorrow.
Oh, I have Marty Biron Islander-related questions. That will leave for tomorrow as well. Enjoy the day.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Left 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.